Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
We have a very special guest with us in our studio who will be talking about the situation of the Nigerian economy and how we are going to probably survive the doomsayings about the COVID-19 and its effect on the Nigerian economy.
I have with me in the studio Sir Gbenga Badejo, who is a graduate of the University of Ibadan some years ago, and is also, of course, you know, University of Ibadan is Nigeria's premier university, and so I'm talking with a seasoned scholar who must have attended that big citadel in Nigeria. He's also an alumnus of the prestigious Lagos Business School and Harvard Kennedy School. Sir Badejo is a versatile chartered accountant, tax expert, financial and management consultant who has over 34 years cognate experience. He started his accounting career at the international firm of BDO, Balogun Badejo Chartered Accountants, where he cut his teeth in accounting, auditing, taxation, financial management, consulting, and later the Ayorin Day Thomas and Company Chartered Accountants before having a checkered career at the SO&U Saatchi, a leading integrated marketing communications firm, as the pioneer finance manager. There he rose through the ranks to become the chief finance officer and head of admin. Sir Badejo established GBC Professional Services Chartered Accountants in 1996 and has a clientele across industries with specialization in assurance, audit, taxation, mergers and acquisition, business incubation, forensic audit, financial and management consulting. And in recognition of his acumen and his worth and value addition, he was appointed expert in residence by the Enterprise Development Center of the Lagos Business School, an affiliate of the Pan-African University, to mentor MSMEs and help nurture budding businesses into maturity. I'm talking about Badejo, who is also a fellow of the Institute of Chartered Accountants, a fellow of the Chartered Institute of Taxation, fellow Chartered Management Institute. He sits on the board of different institutions, investment company, a human capacity development company, an agribusiness, a power and energy development company, and Vice Chairman, Finance and General Purpose Committee of the Nigerian British Chamber of Commerce. He's equally a member of the Nigerian South African Chamber of Commerce. He's a Paul Harris Fellow, Knight of John Wesley, and the current Vice President of the Rotary Club of Ikeja. At spare time, Sir Badejo plays golf and squash. You're welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
I feel like playing squash right now.
Yeah, we can do that later.
Okay, so Sir Badejo, that's quite a long treatise that I've read about you. You must be a seasoned expert in this field. How does that make you feel when you remember how much you've put in to get this to get to this level?
Yeah, I can say to you that I've paid my dues, and I'm still paying my dues.
Yeah.
So learning is a continuous thing. And once you keep learning, you keep enriching your knowledge, and then you can make impact.
No, when I saw your profile and see you now, it looks like there are two different persons. I was expecting a very advanced somebody, and you're still very strong and agile, and you're still younger than I had expected. That means there's so much more you do for this country. So welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you.
Let's begin with from the beginning. Nigerian economy. As a financial expert, as an economist, how would you rate how the Nigerian government and the economy, not government now, the economy has been going? I remember that in December 2019, even before the COVID-19 of 2020, the Ministry of Finance had said that the economy was fragile, even if there was an expectation of growth by about 1.2%.
Yeah.
She said it was still fragile. But now, with this situation, where do we go from here? So let's start from the beginning. How do you see the economy before the COVID-19? Where do you think we were on the right track?
Yes, thank you very much for that question. If you take a good look at what is happening in Nigeria, it is true that the economy has been fragile for a very long time.
Mm.
It's gotten to a breaking point. Things are getting worse mm. by the day. And it is not unexpected. All the indices that you will rely on to make decisions,
yeah.
financial decisions, economic decisions, even political decisions,
mm.
all the indices are looking south.
Yeah.
And it's been worsened by a couple of factors.
Okay.
The COVID-19
mm-hmm.
brought about a very, very terrible impact on our mainstay, the mainstay of the economy,
yeah.
which is oil. Oil prices went down abysmally to a level that became very, very difficult for the government to continue to fund its expenditure. And the level of deficit that the government has had to be funding
yeah.
with borrowing has become very, very alarming.
Mm.
And it's taking a toll on so many things.
Yeah.
In a situation where you have a doubled exchange rate, and this is what Nigerian policymakers have been procrastinating about.
Mm.
And it has encouraged a lot of rent-seeking. Nigerians are good rent seekers.
Yeah.
And when you have policies that will continue to encourage rent seeking, it's going to be very, very difficult
yeah.
to make progress. So, in this country today and everywhere else in the world, what you will find is a mixture of the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's like that all over the place. You find decisions that governments will make for political reasons, but they can't stand on the tripod. If you're making any decision, does it make sense economically? Does it make sense politically? Does it make sense, you know, socially?
Yeah.
So if it cannot stand on that tripod, then there's a big problem.
Hmm.
If you're, the majority of decisions you make are, you know, they are heavily skewed
yeah.
towards political reasons,
yes, yeah.
political correctness, and economic
policies,
they sometimes they work at cross purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Something may be politically expedient, but it may be inimical to the growth in the indices. Take for instance, what the level of decadence, infrastructural decadence,
mm-hmm.
that is prevalent in the country today. If those things are not addressed, how do we want to make progress? You take a look at security, you take a look at education, you take a look at rail transportation system, you take a look at all the fabric of the society. What can generate economic development?
Mm.
What can generate growth? All of them are funded poorly.
Mm.
And if they are funded poorly, where do you want to witness the growth? And everything is a function of government revenue.
Mm.
Where is the revenue coming from? So once you eat the revenue, then government goes scouting around
yeah.
for sources of funding,
mm.
which may be inimical to the economy. But it's not. You cannot imagine not doing anything.
Of course.
So you may be borrowing at the detriment of the economy,
yeah.
but you've got to do something.
Yeah.
You've got to keep moving and keep living on hope. So I will say to you that recently the PMS price was increased by about 3%.
Yeah.
That's additional problem that is going to increase the misery level.
Mm.
Whether you like it or not, life of most people revolves around what is happening to yes.
Yeah.
And as a petroleum producing country,
yeah.
should we still be importing petrol? Should we be importing PMS? Unfortunately, no refinery is working. We keep looking at a situation where you can actually, they say they are modulating the price. They say it's not subsidy again.
Yeah.
But the truth is that, no matter how you look at it,
it's the same thing.
Somebody is paying heavily
mm-hmm.
to subsidize the cost of the utilization of petrol. So if it's still heavily subsidized and the government is having to go and borrow money, to give some benefits. So with all the facets of the economy there are serious strains because a lot of decisions that ought to have been taken in the past have either not been taken, or they've been taken for political consideration, or they've been taken for other considerations other than economic, and it's really affecting the way the country is positioned to weather the storm. So we have a lot to do to ensure that in the basket of this, the good, the bad, and the ugly, the essence is to identify the good and embrace it. Because inside all this voila, inside all this, you know, trouble, there are still some good patches that people can identify and hold on to. You can identify the good and embrace it. You can manage the bad, and then you can run away from the ugly. And I think that is the line that I would like us to pursue in this discussion.
Okay. Thank you. You did mention the infrastructural decadence, for instance, and how that needs to be fixed to help situations. Could we use that to justify the borrowings that the country is involved in, for instance, the ones they are borrowing for with the Chinese for infrastructure, rail lines, and all of that? Should we justify, because some people in some quarters are saying they are borrowing excessively. Okay, so since you've mentioned something like that now, should we justify the borrowings because they need to fix the, some of this infrastructure to boost the economic
Well, that's a very good way to analyze part of our problems. You will notice that the budget, the revised 2020 budget of 10.8 trillion signed into law by the president is a tight, it's like walking a tightrope. Because when you take a look at that budget, there's a deficit of about 4.5 trillion in that budget. And debt servicing out of that is about 2.9 trillion. Capital component of that budget is about 2.4 trillion. And there was, there is a recurrent expenditure budget of 4.9 trillion. This means that about 42% of the budget will be funded by borrowing. You are funding 42% of your budget by borrowing. Now, there is an argument that the current debt service ratio is 66%, which is above the prescribed debt service revenue ratio, which should not be more than 22.5 by World Bank standards. So if Nigeria is borrowing for consumption, is that sustainable? That's totally unacceptable for a country that is struggling with high poverty rate, high misery rate, high unemployment, insecurity, facing recession. It's totally not sustainable. Painfully, monies that end up in personal pockets are also included as part of the metrics for determining budget performance. Take a look at the 1.6 billion that NDDC were shouting about, part of COVID-19 palliatives. Budget performance should not be measured based on the amount expended, but by the value that has been added to the economy. So it's like doing a value for money audit. This, all these monies that were budgeted, did they actually add value to the economy? So in most of the instances, you can't find the value, but money has gone down the drain. Take a look at what is happening apart from Nigeria. South Africa's budget, South Africa is, the population of South Africa is about one-third of Nigeria's population. South Africa had a budget of 122 billion. For 2020. Kenya's budget is 32 billion. Nigeria's budget is 28 billion. Nigeria has a population of 200 million people. South Africa has a population of 57 million people. Kenya, population of 48 million. These countries that are having South Africa 122 billion, Kenya 32 billion, Nigeria is 28 billion. And look at the disparity in our population. Yet, only about 22% of the 2020 budget is for capital expenditure. Just 22% is for capital expenditure. If this 22% is not well managed, a lot of this money ends up in people's pocket because of the prevalent corruption that is in our country. When you factor in overinflated, poorly executed projects, you will notice that Even South Africa, that has a budget, infrastructural budget of $28 billion, they will be better off than Nigeria. Nigeria's budget is about $28 billion for everything. South African budget, South Africa that has a population of about 57 million, has budgeted that about that same amount for infrastructure development. So how are we going to be able to manage to fund without borrowing? It's going to be very difficult. In addition to poor funding, what is happening in other sectors? Education, health, social sectors, which is receiving less than 2 billion, which is not enough to even jumpstart our economy. I wonder how the government wants to stabilize the economy with the current policy and budget. If you look at the allocation to the health sector, education sector, allocation for presidency, allocation for National Assembly, these are whooping sums of money that will make you think very well about whether we are serious about economic development, whether we are serious about developing our society, whether we are serious about dealing with the cankerworm.
Yeah.
I mean, whether we are serious about making sure that people receive value for money. It's doubtful.
Okay, so let me just ask you a quick one. At this point, for instance, since 2015, we've been having an anti-corruption crusade. Should we still be talking about money going down the drains when it has been earmarked for a particular infrastructure development at this time when we're having a government that's fighting corruption?
Now, if you look at critically at all past efforts in fighting corruption, it's like we're going about around in cycles. We're going around in circles. The sincerity of past governments to fight corruption is put to question here.
Okay.
Now, we have serious local, maybe let me say environmental problems. There is judicial reforms that was started during the regime before the immediate past regime started some judicial reforms, and we're expected to have reaped some benefits. The level of, you know, the commitment to diligent prosecution, are we there? Are we having all those corruption cases, are they diligently prosecuted? Government has recovered a lot of money. Are they put into a use that immediately transforms some critical sectors of the economy? Are we biting more than we can chew? The monies that are recovered, what are they channeled into? Anti-graft bodies, I mean, you know what has happened in recent times. The kind of scandals that is all over the place. It's depressing. You are trying to make sure that things are under control, but at the same time you are getting information that suggests that things are not under control. Now, it's been widely said, I don't know if you will agree with this, that the number of people waiting to go into government to loot far outweighs the number of people currently looting. What has encouraged that? Because the kind of feedback that people are getting is that nothing will happen. This is a country where there are no consequences. If there are no consequences, that's positive reinforcement for undesirable behavior. So you are recruiting an army of people that wants to go into government and then, I mean, further impoverish the level of you know, ability of the populace to survive big time. So poverty index, misery index, everybody is not satisfied with what is happening.
Just a quick one on that. How are we going to change that narrative so that young people just change their mentality instead of having that prepared mindset for corruption before they come into government? Because definitely they will come into government, whether we like it or not. People are going to die off, retire, and all of that. How do we change that narrative before it gets worse than we are already having?
It's got to be methodical. You don't keep doing the same thing the same way and expect a different result. It's like we are in a situation of madness. because you will keep doing the same thing the same way. Every corruption czar that came to come and do a rescue job will end up being discredited. Somebody will say 99.9% of Nigerians are corrupt. I don't agree, because I am not corrupt. Now, if you take a look
maybe you are the 1% that
if you take a look at the society,
yeah.
What do we reward as a nation, as a people? What do we reward? Do we ask the right questions? I have said in so many of my friends that we have a lot of, you know, people that are in possession of illicit wealth. The society gives them recognition. There are people cannot account for the sources of their wealth, and these people roam about. And these people are the people that will eventually go into politics. These are the people that will hold the country by the jugular, because you can actually buy anything. You can buy justice. You can buy the police. You can buy
chieftaincy titles.
You buy chieftaincy titles. You buy everything. Now, there's something that is called in management parlance the power of one.
Okay.
I decide to do what is right. You decide to do what is right. He decides to do what is right. We will be growing an army of people that wants real change.
Okay.
Now, we may not have power over what the police is doing, what the FCC is doing, but you have a power to live a life that shows good example to the next guy, to your wards, to your children, to your dependents. But in a situation where everybody looks in one direction, who is going to catch a thief? You are using a thief. You want to use a thief to catch a thief. It's going to be very difficult.
Okay.
There are several reforms that we would deliberately pursue to ensure that people are held accountable for their actions.
Okay.
Leaders will continue to emerge. If these leaders emerge and they're a product of the corruption we are talking about, I doubt if anything good can come from someone that is a product of corruption.
Okay.
So we need to do a lot of reorientation. We've had MAMSA, we've had so many grassroots mobilization agencies, and a lot of them have gone comatose. We need serious reorientation. I don't think they offer civics again in our institutions. They still do.
Yes,
I must be far away from reality then. But we need to have a systemic way of inculcating discipline, of inculcating, you know, living a life that could be an example to others. The generation that we are in now, everybody is on a fast lane. People want to make money. Everybody wants to make money. And you don't care about where the money is coming from. And our society celebrates people that are smart, in quotes. So everybody wants to be smart.
Well, one last question before we go on a quick break. The lockdown as a result of the COVID-19, how much do you think it affected the economy? And some people believe that the way Nigeria locked down was too hasty and it wasn't taking into effect recognition the Nigerian situation where the economy depends on, a lot of people depend on everyday income. You know, and that kind of affected the whole, it made it worse. So do you share that sentiment? Do you think the Nigerian government was hasty in the way they brought a lockdown, or how would you also rate the effect of that lockdown on the economy generally?
The lockdown, as I see it, is technically a life-saving mechanism. We are concerned about spreading of COVID-19 within the communities. We are concerned about the monitoring, trying to put under control the casualty rate. What happened in America was a pointer to the fact that if nothing was done at the time it was done, maybe we will face a lot of calamities. I can even say to you that we are not testing as well as we should. If you look at the rate at which people have been tested in Nigeria, we're likely to even have many more incidences. But what can we do? We don't even have our medical facilities are stretched, overstretched, and the only option available to government is to was to lock down the economy, lock down so that people can exercise some level of control or create consciousness, create awareness for the harmful effect of allowing people to just go on as if nothing is happening. Even now, if you happen to go to a couple of places, you'll be wondering what is really happening. The awareness, the light kind of consciousness that people should have to check the spread of COVID-19, I believe is still very, very low. And the ease of lockdown is also not helping matters because people are assuming that nothing is happening. Yeah. It cannot happen. So some people still don't believe in COVID-19.
It's a VIP disease.
It's a VIP disease because they get to hear about those VIPs that are, you know. But a lot of other people will be dying too.
Yeah,
will be dying unknown. I mean, there are thousands of people that are unknown that will be dying. And the truth is, the government has a responsibility to protect the life of its citizens, or else there may be chaos.
Okay, that is Gbenga Badejo with me in the studio. We are still talking about the Nigerian economy as regards COVID-19 and what way forward from now. We'll be back after this short break. Stay with us as we take this commercial timeout. Sending money to Nigeria? ZingaPay, is it? ZingaPay is not just a money transfer platform. Sending money to Nigeria through ZingaPay gives you multiple benefits such as reduced fees for money transfers, Naira mobile wallet for speedy and efficient local Naira transfer and bills payment plus an Axam Ansard mutual fund investment account with attractive returns. So while sending money to Nigeria, you enjoy additional benefits of savings and investment with our mutual funds investment account in the ZingaPay Cooperative Society program. For more details and to register, log on to www.zingapay.com or send an email to zingapay@zingapay.com. Don't just send money to Nigeria. Imbibe a savings and investment culture with ZingaPay. ZingaPay. We make your money work for you.
For your mouth-watering, delicious, and tasty African meals in Atlanta and environs, it's got to be Fat Fine Dining Restaurant. Our African soups, dishes, and specials have no match in our territory. Order an African meal today from Fat Fine Dining Restaurant and enjoy that original African taste. Fat Fine Dining Restaurant is on 3565 Austell Road, Suite 1059, Marietta, Atlanta, Georgia, next to Austell International Farmers Markets. Telephone 770-431-8505. Visit www.fatfinedining.com to order right away. Fat Fine Dining Restaurant, enjoy the African in you.
I have a dream not only for the North but for the entire country, Nigeria. I have a dream that Nigeria will be truly united one day. I have a dream that Nigeria will have a buoyant, a strong economy. I have a dream that Nigeria will have the political clout that will enable her to lead the rest of Africa and the blacks all over the world. I have a dream that Nigerians will come to regard one another as their brother's keepers. I have a dream that Nigeria will take her proper place in the Committee of Nations.
The spirit of Nigeria. Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
Welcome back. You're still listening to Spirit of Nigeria Radio, and this is Nigeria Today. And if you're just joining us, I've been here with Sir Gbenga Badejo, who is discussing the Nigerian economy with us here in the studio. And what we just heard, Sir Badejo, we just heard Maitama Sule talking about his dreams for Nigeria, including the Nigerian economy. And unfortunately, we lost him 2 years ago, 3 years ago, back in 2017. I know before he died, he must have seen the situation of Nigeria. He lived that long enough. So do you think he saw a light towards that dream of a good economically strong Nigeria? Or if he wakes up today to look at Nigeria, how would he see Nigeria in the line of that dream of an economically strong country?
Thank you. It's good to dream, but you must wake up to actualize your dreams.
Yeah.
I think Nigeria, we are still in a slumber. If we must actualize these dreams, there's a lot of work to be done. Like I said earlier, all the indices are going south. I'm sure his dream was founded on some key areas. You will envisage that there should be some key improvements in the economy. Now, let me give you some basic facts. The adjustment of the official rate of Forex from 360 to 381 is portends some great danger to economic development.
Okay.
There is still a multiple exchange rate window that also encourages rent seeking.
Okay.
Inflation is eating like 13%. Treasury bill average rate for 91 days is 1.2%. And it's the ability to do business, the ease of doing business, we are not also where we ought to be.
Mm.
The rate of unemployment, by the data published by Nigerian Bureau of Statistics, has gone up to about 27.1, and underemployment is about 28.6. Investors are able to, so there have been job cuts, job losses, you know, and nobody would have dreamt that there would be all of those would happen. People have lost their job, they've lost their income, and then people are losing their mental health. The societal cost of all high unemployment is that it reduces crime rate, increases crime rates, and it's terrible. The rate of food inflation, it's been double digits for 3 years, and one is beginning to wonder if one of the legacies this current administration will leave will not be high inflation, because it's very terrible to imagine that food inflation rate has been high consistently for about 3 years in a situation where you also have growth in population that far outweighs your growth in GDP. So there's a lot of mismatch, and these mismatches portend greater danger to enable us get out of the doldrums. If your growth rate in your employment, underemployment, growth rate in inflation is anything to go by, I think we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work to do. So it's not going to be easy to actualize that dream as encapsulated by that statesman, but it is not impossible if there's the political will to do what is right, if there's the political will to change the narratives, if there's political will to focus on critical areas, infrastructural development, curtail all wastages. I mean, the percentage of the revenue that goes into debt servicing, the percentage of revenue that goes into funding overheads that are avoidable, do we need to have a democracy that is this costly. Mm. I mean, all those things must be harnessed, and we must operate in optimal fashion that enables the dividend of democracy, as they say, to cascade to the populace. This dividend of democracy, we've been saying it. Let me give you an example. Way back in the 90s, we had a military regime, and then we kept listening to jingles about food for all by the year 2000, free health for all by the year 2000, housing for all by the year 2000. That was 20 years ago. That was a dream. And it has taken us 20 years. We haven't even seen indications that those dreams can be actualized. But it's never too late to reorder our priorities. It's just a matter of priorities. If we have a situation where we can run a lean government, we have 36 states, we have 36 House of Assemblies, if we put together all the budgets, what is expended to maintain 36 House of Assembly, we have a dual bicameral legislation. We have retinue of political office holders. If you add all of this together, what value are we getting for having a democracy as expensive as we currently run? So I believe it's a matter of priorities. If we can't get our priorities right, so no dream can be actualized.
Well, and that's that sounds a bit threatening, that the dream may not be realized anytime soon. Okay, at this point, I can give out the phone numbers in case you want to call into the show or ask our guest any question. You can call the lines, plus 234-705-320-1010. Plus 234-705-320-1010. Or you can as well call plus 447-901-642-969. Plus 447-901-642-969. In case you want to join us on the show. Okay, part of the things you mentioned, sir, was about unemployment. The index has risen up to 27% of Nigerians unemployed. And unfortunately, as a result of the COVID-19, thousands of Nigeria have returned from abroad. Some are still on their way. Some are still, we're still seeing videos of people crying for help. They want to come back. Now, that is adding to the number of unemployed Nigerians already. So how can the country come out of this with all of this situation at this point, with the rising level of unemployment? What can be done for the young people who need jobs to survive, and also curtail the after effect in the security architecture, as it's affecting insecurity in the country? What can we do to salvage this?
Thank you. It's really scary, but there are no problems without solution. If we address our mind to the enormity of our problem, part of the problem we have is that we shy away from our problems. Okay. And that in itself is like we live in a dreamland, you know, like we shy away from our problems. So if you shy away from, if you can't, you can't solve a problem you have not correctly identified. Now, the rate of employment is high, is astronomical, is frightening. But the reason why we are this way, let me give you an instance. The number of unemployed people in Nigeria is greater than the entire population of Belgium. Isn't that surprising? The entire population of unemployed people in Nigeria.
Okay, so please let me take this call. Hello? Hello?
Hello, hello, good evening.
Hello, good evening. Welcome to the show. Tell us your name and location.
My name is Ken from London.
Okay, Ken from London. How are you today?
We are following your live discussion. We appreciate the interest, okay?
Okay.
We have some questions that happen.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, we are listening. You have a question?
Okay, yeah. We in Africa, we are monitoring the situation of the economy.
Can you take that
and
again?
We've been worried.
Okay.
We, Nigerians in Darfur, we're a little bit worried about the situation of the economy back home.
Okay.
Where we are a little bit disturbed with the post-COVID economic situation of the country.
Yeah.
What does the economy portend for the future? Do we still have any economic plan to accommodate the global emanating from the source?
Okay, if I get you correctly, you mean what is it, what's the way forward and how would you come, what's the way forward of the economy for those of you who are not in Nigeria and how you would also help?
Not about you. What does the future lie with the post-COVID economic situation in Nigeria?
Okay, post-COVID.
Do we have the economic plan to...
Okay.
Accommodate the pressure coming from the post-COVID
situation. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr.
Kim. All right. Not performing very well and all the things. We need to know what the future life for the COVID economic of Nigeria. Thank you.
Thank you for calling, Mr. Kim. Have a nice day. Okay. He's asking, what does the future hold with all of the situation coming from the COVID-19? How can it be buffered and restored to a better economy?
That's a very good question, at least for people to actually come to terms with the efforts of government. The government has done a lot of things in this regard. There are several palliative packages. The CBN has rolled out a lot of, I'm aware of about 10 stimulus packages that are in existence. One of them is 50 billion facility to take care of SMEs and households due to loss of income. Yeah. And at the last count, I understand about 49 billion has been disbursed. This may be a far cry to what actually the economy requires.
Yeah.
But there are palliatives directed at the entertainment industry, the creative industry, there are palliatives directed at the manufacturing sector, there are palliatives directed at all sectors of the economy to ensure that they can generate employment, they can remain, they can manage to remain afloat.
Yeah.
And every time we hear about post-COVID measures, the government rings a bell in our consciousness that you need to stay alive first and foremost to be able to do anything meaningful after the there's a second wave that people are expecting would come up.
Yeah.
The rate at which people even envisage the second wave is a lot of problems.
Yeah.
But the government is putting things in place to ensure that businesses stay afloat, businesses can receive support. I personally know businesses that have received some type level of support. Mm. So I think in that regard, the government has done a bit in that, and I know a lot more will still be done.
So there is a future?
There's a future.
Okay.
There's a post-COVID future.
Okay, of course. Yeah. People like Ken have to reduce the fear and fright, because definitely all agencies of government, including some private agencies, are putting things together to assist in any way that they can. Now, you mentioned the issue of micro and small businesses. Now, that, of course, offers a lot of employment to people. But there is a lacuna here in Nigeria. In the Naira Metrics record, they said, in fact, coming also from the Nigerian Bureau of Statistics, they said the people that set up businesses in Nigeria, 60% of them, or even more than that, set up businesses from savings, from personal savings. And do you think that is good for that means we are not really being supported, or people who do business are not really being supported by the banking industry and the government?
Yeah.
If more than 60% of SMEs are started on personal savings, how much do you think the banks
can do or are doing to help establish businesses, which ameliorates the issues of joblessness in Nigeria?
The truth is that whatever is worth doing at all is worth doing well. Mm. A lot of SMEs start business without focus. People are not really grounded in the art of doing business.
Mm.
If you are going into a business, you must have a plan.
Okay.
You must have a reason for going into it. You can't just go into a business because someone across the road is doing
business.
You must sit down and plan. Because if you don't plan well, then you have failure staring you in the face.
Mm.
80% of SMEs die within the first 5 years.
Mm.
So any serious thinking person, the financial institution, will be very wary of putting money in ventures that would suffer some, you know, hiccups, and then the money goes down the drain. But there are agencies like BOI, SMEDAN, that are positioned to teach people the skill, the art of doing business, so that business is something that should be done in an organized way. Mm. And funding is being made available.
Okay.
I was part of a team of consultants that helped like 1,000 businesses to organize and to plan well, to be able to deliver value into the environment, and then so that the business can continue without let or hindrance.
Mm.
So as tough as the economy is, the key to economic growth and employment is availability of funding.
Yeah.
Who would fund someone that does not know where he's headed?
Mm.
Who? So it starts from building the blocks. Mm. You want to do business. What business do you want to do? What are your critical success factors? What are your dreams? What are your challenges? And then you begin to do business in a scalable fashion.
Mm.
You don't want to build a high-rise overnight.
Yeah.
So you start from the first floor, second floor, and by so doing, you will get support from agencies that are willing and able to fund businesses that are growing. The truth is that jobs must be created, employment must be created, businesses must be able to survive.
Right, yeah.
Businesses that are giving value must be able to thrive.
Yeah.
And for any business that gives value, ability to receive the necessary funds will not be in jeopardy.
Yeah.
So we need to think about enduring businesses, enduring business practices. I mean, run a business that can stand the test of time. Don't run businesses that are highfalutin, or you are looking for a big amount of money. Run a lean business. Establish your niche, carve your niche for yourself, and there are agencies that will assist. BOI, Bank of Industry, has a lot of stimulus packages.
Yeah.
The truth is, people don't actually believe that those things exist.
Yeah.
We've been driven to a level that the level,
no
people
trust.
Don't believe, no trust. People don't believe in all these things, but they exist, and people are taking advantage of it. But you must first put yourself in order and know what you are doing.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir. Let's quickly talk about this other thing before we begin to wrap up the show. Around employment. Now, we are having a problem where skilled labor in Nigeria are leaving the country or always wanting to leave the country. There was an outcry in, is it Ogun State now, two weeks ago that over 100 medical facilities of the government, there were about 20-something of doctors for such number of medical agencies of the government or hospitals.
Yeah.
So now every day we see medical doctors leave Nigeria, and that is what is more obvious. There are still other experts who don't want to come back to Nigeria, or those who are still in Nigeria, they want to go, or when they get trained abroad, they never come back. So Nigeria is really suffering from brain drain. Okay, so how can we stop that? Because we need hands in this country. Nigeria needs hands, every expert it can get in every sector. But how do you rate the effect of brain drain in Nigeria so far? And what can we do to
stop that so that people work at home and help the economy grow.
Now, until we improve our infrastructural base, until we improve our facilities, there's little or nothing you can do about brain drain. Mm. I don't call it brain drain. Okay. The people are looking for greener pastures.
Okay.
But over time, it's been discovered that the grass is not greener anywhere. You know, you're looking for greener pastures, but you have to weigh the cost. Yeah. Now, there's a school of thought that believes that people go out of this country to earn forex, not only to earn a good living, to live the quality of life that they live abroad is far better and richer than the quality of life we live here. So when Nigerians that are trained in Nigeria become qualified, they go abroad, don't forget about diaspora remittances. So there's a school of thought that believes that we are exporting your labor in return for remittances.
Okay.
So if you said to me today that it is brain drain, this brain drain has actually, you know, somehow
there's
something that comes back in return.
Yeah.
So are we going to encourage that to the detriment of our local, you know, environment? So we need to develop our competence. We need to develop more local competencies. Because if we are not able to go to manage our environment so that it can be attractive, so that people don't start going abroad, everybody start going abroad. When they start going abroad, there's a benefit that also comes back to us. A lot of these people will acquire training expertise and eventually come back to this economy.
But which outweighs the other? The benefit and the other side of it, which outweighs?
Eventually, Nigeria could be better for it.
Okay.
Because if you take a look at the rate at which we're growing, it's so abysmally low that some of these people may never want to come back. So if they don't come back, they keep sending in diaspora remittances.
Okay.
That is a form of benefit. The challenge now is to grow our economy, improve our infrastructure, make working in Nigeria to be attractive, so that chances are that some of these people will bring their competencies back into our economy, bring their competencies back at some point in time, and it benefits. I know of banks that recruit from abroad. I know of companies that would poach from companies abroad.
Okay.
And this exporting our labor in itself could be seen as a negative, you know.
Something.
That's why you call it brain drain.
Yeah.
But acquiring expertise, the world is a global village.
Yeah.
There used to be a time where we have Indians, we have foreigners coming to become teachers in our secondary schools.
Yeah.
And when the economic situation in Nigeria became worse, they all fled.
Yeah.
Nigerians are also going away in droves. So we need concerted efforts to ensure that we also develop our environment infrastructurally, economically, we improve our living standards, we guarantee security of lives and properties, so that the level of the brain drain, as you called it, it go down. And then this may even encourage some people, maybe they are tired of, you know,
staying
abroad, to come back home, and then you can make use of their expertise.
Okay.
So it's, you have to wait.
Yeah.
It's a two sides of a coin.
Yeah.
And there's no one way of looking at it.
Okay.
Look at it in several ways. And that could be a match.
Okay.
But if we don't improve our economic conditions, economic situation, if there's no purchasing power, you earn a lot of money, and the money goes into buying diesel, providing your own bowl, no water, no electricity, it's not attractive for everybody to come and stay.
Okay, one quick one here. We're about to round up. This will be my last question. Half of Nigerian families live with remittances abroad. And with the effect of COVID-19, a lot of people might not be remitting within this period. What effect does that have on the economy in the long run?
Well, it's the effect is once diaspora remittances drop, It means there's something called a buffer, like a float, that is available, is no longer there. And that's why the country will witness a lot of distress in terms of people's purchasing power. And when the people's purchasing power go down, then you find an upsurge in the crime rate. When there's an upsurge in the crime rate, what do you expect? Everybody lives in fear. Rate of mental decadence will come in. A lot of people are falling sick. They can't even afford good health care. So it's going to be, it's something that is better imagined.
That smells like some doom.
So
we'll take another quick break. Let's go for some commercials. We'll return to wrap this up. Stay with us.
For your mouth-watering, delicious and tasty African meals in Atlanta and environs, it's got to be Fat Fine Dining Restaurant. Our African soups, dishes and specials have no match in our territory. Order an African meal today from Fat Fine Dining Restaurant and enjoy that original African taste. Fat Fine Dining Restaurant is on 3565 Austell Road, Suite 1059, Marietta, Atlanta, Georgia, next to Austell International Farmers Market. Telephone 770-431-8505. Visit www.fatfinedining.com to order right away. Fat Fine Dining Restaurant, enjoy the African in you.
Sending money to Nigeria? ZingaPay is it? ZingaPay is not just a money transfer platform. Sending money to Nigeria through ZingaPay gives you multiple benefits such as reduced fees for money transfers, Naira mobile wallet for speedy and efficient local Naira transfer and bills payment, plus an AXA Mansard mutual fund investment account with attractive returns. So while sending money to Nigeria, you enjoy additional benefits of savings and investment with our mutual funds investment account in the ZingaPay Cooperative Society program. For more details and to register, log on to www.zingapay.com or send an email to zingapay@zingapay.com. Don't just send money to Nigeria. Imbibe a savings and investment culture with ZingaPay. ZingaPay, we make your money work for you.
The people have always lived together, and they can continue to live together in this country. Nigeria will be existing in the next 1,000 years. So whatever is 100 years is nothing, but we can always take off from our mistakes, what we've done wrongly, now that we know in the next 50 years, what are the mechanics, things we will put in place to advance us from our present position to the next 50 years. But I think the development is people, people all the time, improving on their life, improving on their welfare, improving on the state of the country, its security, its people, and so on.
The spirit of Nigeria. Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
Welcome back to the show. It is still Nigeria Today, and you just heard from a former head of state and a statesman in Nigeria, Ibrahim Bada Mosi Babangida, and one key thing he just said there is how people, investing in people is key in developing the country.
And I'm still here with Gbenga Badejo, who is discussing the issues of Nigerian economy as regards COVID-19. And so Badejo, from what he said, there are many Nigerians abroad who have fears. Oh, not just fears now. Let me not start with the negative. There are many Nigerians abroad who want to invest in their people and have businesses at home and all of that. So as we speak, COVID-19 has brought up some certain level of fears among people. And just like Mr. Kevin, who called from London, was asking about way forward, let's now talk about, in terms of them coming home to invest in people as much as they can, what are they, where, which particular places in Nigeria can they look into? What can they hold on to ameliorate those fears and then invest in what areas in Nigeria moving forward?
Thank you. It's a catch-22 situation. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are skeptical about the post-COVID era. We still don't know when that post-COVID era will be. Mm-hmm. Because we are thinking of a second wave. Yeah. Of so people must tread softly. Nobody should take any hasty decisions. Mm-hmm. Until it's clear to the whole world. Yes. Now, international flights would resume August 28 or 29. 29. Will it be? Is it for real? Mm-hmm. As we move closer to that date, it will become, that date will become a fait accompli. Yeah. Nobody knows yet. Yeah. And a lot of things are happening locally. Now, the government is trying to assist states to implement the new wage policy, minimum wage policy. Only 6 states have been able to implement the new wage policy, while 5 states have concluded negotiations with the organized labor for consequent adjustments and implementation. 4 states are yet to even set up committees because the existing salaries they are yet to pay. And government is the largest employer of labor in this country. So the mystery level is expected to get higher and higher. Now, there's also there's a direction, because there must be food security. The government has done a lot to ensure that to increase agricultural yield per hectare, because of the kind of agro funding that has been made available by CBN to allow agro-allied businesses to thrive.
Yeah.
So chances are that anyone that is coming into this country and is focusing on agriculture because of the food security, even if people are not earning as much as they should be earning, at least they will have food to buy. The worst problem we can have is famine.
Yeah.
Because in the West African sub-region, if anything happens to Nigeria, and the old sub-region is gone. So, food security, the government must continue to ensure that anyone that is interested in increasing the agricultural yield by hectare must be supported. The borrowers Anchor Borrowers Program is already yielding a lot of results. Nigeria is very close to self-sufficiency in rice production. And the agric value chain, I believe that is where the future is, the agri value chain. Some people are going into mining, mineral products, and all those things. Yes, but you must look for businesses that has low gestation period.
Okay.
Businesses that will not consume too much money,
and
then able to give you money at a quick rate of returns. The money market, there's nothing happening there. So for people that are bringing back money and keeping it in banks, I mean, I don't know what level of return they expect. So the banks are also encouraged to lend credible businesses money, because the regulatory loan deposit ratio has been increased to 65%. So that means there are loanable funds available. But I think anything that has to do with food security, would healthcare delivery, food security, and basic necessities of life would make a very good...
Which are the primary things everybody needs at this point.
Yes. Now, I also know that the government is trying to open up Lagos-Ibadan by rail. The government is also trying to make sure that the ongoing construction of the second Niger Bridge is completed. Lagos-Ibadan Expressway, because these are some of the things that will come in the way of productivity, come in the way of economic development. Do you know that to be able to bring your goods from if you're importing goods from China, for instance, it costs a lot more to bring your goods from the Nigerian ports to your factory than to bring your goods from China to Nigeria.
That's interesting.
The kind of bottleneck, the time that's lost in clearing your goods, far outweighs the cost of shipping. How much does it cost to ship a car from Europe or from America? Maybe if you are not putting in a container, maybe $1,500 if it's Roro, $1,500. But the energy, the time it will cost you to be able to clear your car, that's why we talk about ease of doing business. And the government is doing a lot of work to ensure that people can do business with ease and encourage productivity. The government has recently worked with the Companies and Other Matters Act to introduce some incentive so that people can do business with ease. But surely anyone that wants to come into this business, in this country, must focus on things that has to do with food security, survival, making sure that basic needs are met. Anything that has to do with that would be a good approach, a good way of coming into this economy. The population is there, but this population we are talking about, the purchasing power has been eroded. So you can't come and be doing luxury items. This is not the time to sell luxury swatches for someone who is managing to keep body and soul together. And you will notice that recently there's a shout about ShopRite exiting Nigeria. As ShopRite is exiting Nigeria, it provides opportunity for local local enterprises, local businesses that may not even be able to afford to take a space. Meanwhile, they have their merchandise. For a farmer that is in Ikiri Ogmogon or Ibokia or Ibogila, places that are like 200, 300 kilometers from Lagos, they have things that they can come and showcase. But these things are perishable. There must be good roads to ensure that they can
come into that.
Yes, there must be good roads to ensure that these goods can come to where the demand is. I mean, they can't produce, they can't eat all they produce. A lot of the maize that is produced outside Lagos, they are either consumed or they perish because they are not anywhere near where the market is. So once the infrastructures are fixed, there's hope that things will gradually come back to normal and people can make a living. Food security is key.
That issue of investing in food or agribusiness, you just mentioned the issue of perishability. We do lack a whole lot of storage facilities in Nigeria. For instance, we know that we still have seasonal foods in Nigeria. If the time for mango is gone, you don't get mangoes. If the time for corn is gone, you don't get corns. You know, so if people come to invest in food business or agribusinesses in Nigeria, will that not be an effect in terms of people losing some products that they should use or that should yield more interest to them, since we don't have all those even technological storage facilities? Isn't that something to consider?
That's a very good one. Do you know the agri value chain is very robust? And you have players in each sector of the value chain. Some people would grow, some people would process, and some people would convert to something else. Yes. Now, logistics is key. As we speak, there are companies springing up in Nigeria that goes all around the country. The North is the food basket of the nation. There are companies that will go all around the country and bring those products to where the market is. It's already happening.
Okay.
I know FedEx is doing something like that. I'm opportunity to know from Nigeria Business Chamber of Commerce that FedEx is investing a lot in warehousing, in refrigeration, and then in bringing, I mean, putting logistics in place to get those agricultural products to where they can either be converted or exported, and reduce or stocked or protected from decay. From decay.
Yeah.
And this is the way to go. That's why I said food security, agricultural production, there's a lot to be done in that area. Yeah. And whichever way you look at it, if you come into the maximizing the value chain, then you will always have an opportunity to do one thing or the other.
Yeah.
It's just to be able to know what are my capabilities, what kind of funding do I have, and which role do I want to play in the agri value chain.
Okay.
That is key.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, one last thing now.
Yeah.
The North has a vast land, and we call it the food basket of the nation, but they are growing insecurities. And that's denying the country of a lot of farming lands and, by extension, food products. If the country, if the government is not able to stem this in the near future, does that portend a lot of the... Can there are other southern places where there are some kind of peace or people are able to farm? And we still have issues of herdsmen in certain areas down south. So... With the available land so far, does it can it feed, even if a lot of people do invest? Are there spaces for these investments so that everybody can have a place to farm when a huge stock of land have been having security issues where people are afraid to venture into?
It's really no gain saying that security constitutes the biggest threat to our existence as a nation. We've been on this Boko Haram stuff for God knows how many years. And there's no indication that it's going to abate. The government comes up to say Boko Haram has been technically defeated. But you still find a lot, at the time it was just skirmishes here and there. But the wave of, recently has gone up. So without security of lives and properties, then we are not serious about growing our economy at all. Because everything rises and falls on ability to secure people's lives
and
properties. Nobody wants to come home into an environment where you're not even safe, you're not even sure. And then in the south, the insurgency is not here, but there's kidnapping, there's insecurity all over the place. Now, the truth about it is, if you can't go about your business without any fear of molestation or any fear of being kidnapped, then there's a problem. How can you thrive in an environment that is not safe? So it's in everybody's consciousness that it's difficult to go out there. It's not safe for you to go out there.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to do business in that kind of environment.
Mm.
So the government must put a lot of energy, take a look at our security architecture, and then do something about it. If we don't do anything about security, then we are not serious about nation building.
Thank you very much, Sir Badejo. Before we go, one last word for our listeners as regards the economy. Some people might be interested in investing or coming back home and all of that. One last word for them before we call it a wrap.
There's a lot of potentials in Nigeria. We have the market size that is enviable. Don't worry that maybe purchasing power is not there today. But there's a niche that everybody can carve. Markets will not shrink as much as the markets out there. In Europe, there's recession everywhere. But it's been estimated that the African market may not shrink as much as the European or American market. So the opportunities are here, provided the government is able to provide the enabling environment. So everything is still hinged on our ability to do what is right, our ability to invest in the right direction, security, infrastructure, healthcare, education. But Nigeria is an emerging market, and nobody can take that away from Nigeria. It's a land full of milk and honey. And whether we are going to be able to take the milk and honey is a function of how well we're able to tackle, how well we're able to sit on our demons. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. It's been a wonderful time with you, and we're glad we're able to tap from your wealth of knowledge. You just listened to Sir Gbenga Badiju, a financial expert who has been with us in the studio to discuss the Nigerian economy pre, post, and in COVID. Someone said we shouldn't be even thinking about post-COVID. We should just think in COVID because they might stay in for a long time. Okay, so you've been listening to Spirit of Nigeria Radio, and that was Nigeria Today. And this time, we'll go on a break, and when we return, we'll continue with the stories in Nigeria. Do stay with us. Sending money to Nigeria? ZingaPay, is it? ZingaPay is not just a money transfer platform. Sending money to Nigeria through ZingaPay gives you multiple benefits such as reduced fees for money transfers, Naira mobile wallet for speedy and efficient local Naira transfer and bills payment, plus an AXA Mansard mutual fund investment account with attractive returns. So while sending money to Nigeria, you enjoy additional benefits of savings and investment with our mutual funds investment account in the ZingaPay Cooperative Society program. For more details and to register, log on to www.zingapay.com or send an email to zingapay@zingapay.com. Don't just send money to Nigeria. Imbibe a savings and investment culture with ZingaPay. ZingaPay. We make your money work for you.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.